bitch!
Catapults of propaganda.
The military industrial complex.
The highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert. Sharon Gilbert is taking the evening off, but we've got a full hour nonetheless, even though working with half my brain, because as you know, she does have half my brain and all of my heart. Tonight, as we get into the holiday weekend, we've got a special guest. We told you last night, and we are pleased to welcome back to our guest line, Captain Eric May of Ghost Troop. Captain May, thank you for joining us on PID Radio.
GT Derek, I'm very grateful on behalf of myself and Ghost Troop, your home unit, for you setting us up so quickly on such short notice. But with such an environment of emergency about us right now, I could see why you did it, and I couldn't be more pleased. Thanks a lot.
Well, no trouble at all. No trouble at all. Now, we've got a holiday weekend coming up, and I know that you've got some things that have kind of appeared on your radar screen. Is it the 4th of July you see as a target date, or is there something else coming up this weekend that you think we need to pay attention to?
Well, no, both and. The target date of 4th of July has to be considered because remember, that there's nothing that we say when we do analysis of the prospects of what we call the Bush League, a Bush League false flag attack. There's nothing we say that they're not saying because they're trying to set up what we're trying to warn about. And they're the ones who constantly reinforce that we need to look out for anniversaries of attack, like the 7/7 bombing anniversary, or we need to look out for iconic targets like the Sears Tower, which we predicted they would try to hit, and 6 weeks later they said seven black guys in Florida were trying to hit. So we kind of read off their script. And if you read their script, they're the first ones who would say, boy, wouldn't Al-Qaeda, which, of course, we call Al-CIA, duh, wouldn't they love to hit us on Independence Day? So Independence Day is a day of note, but particularly this year because it's linked to an event that we were involved in last year, which is another launch of the Shuttle Discovery.
Now,
last year we found that the Shuttle Discovery had quite terrifying coincidences with an attack on British Petroleum and indeed on Texas City, the host city for British Petroleum, along the southeast Texas Gulf Coast. That was July 28th last year. But this year it'll be a little bit earlier. The shuttle launch is going to be July 1st if they go through with it, which right now is in doubt. And Lord knows we'd like to see them not go through with it.
Now, we talked about that incident on July 28th last year. That was the, if you haven't heard that interview that we did with Captain May about 2 weeks ago, I refer you to our archives to go back and listen to that. And, of course, there will be a link to the interview with Lenny Bloom of Cloak and Dagger Radio from last summer in which well, I won't go back and re-summarize, but it appeared that there was a nuclear blast, according to what was happening in the sky. It looked like something very large had exploded over the looking south from Houston. So you believe that the launch of the shuttle, if it goes up, is some sort of a signal, or there is some special significance to the date on which it's being launched?
I don't get any significance on the 7/1 launch date, but I get tremendous significance off the signal value of the space shuttle. What we see that, remember, when we deal with the Bush League, we're talking about Illuminatus wasps and Kabbalist Zionists. And they love to have symbology involved. And the symbolic value of the shuttle is intense. It's probably the ultimate prestige weapon in the U.S. inventory. Although, of course, it's put off to the public as just being, you know, something where they a little floating lab where they breed tadpoles and it's, you know, 100 miles above the Earth's surface. But if you're Bush, and I always say that you have to get inside the head of the enemy commander, and clearly a man who commits treasonous acts against his own country is the enemy commander in this case. If you're Bush, it's the ultimate prestige and dominant symbol to put into the air. And it has all kinds of weapons and intelligence platforms, many of which we don't have a clue about it. So it's classified stuff, which would be very advantageous to have up in the air if indeed going to enact the much dreaded and at this point widely anticipated 911-2B, or the 911, which is 2B, attack.
I'm glad you mentioned that. So you suspect that the shuttle Discovery might be some sort of, say, AWACS on steroids?
Oh, I'd say, yeah. In fact, it's very interesting as you put it that way. I'd say AWACS times a dozen to 100. You pick.
Hmm.
You know, we didn't spend tens of billions of dollars for something that's going to be a floating classroom. It's got all kinds of potential. And last year we mentioned, and I know you're going to link to this podcast, the Cloak and Dagger interview, which is historic, because what we saw in the sky was, your listeners may know that I was a former Chemical Corps NCO. Nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare was my specialty, and I did a field survey measurement of the cloud top, cloud width, direction, and distance of the event that we saw, and we had a sham nuke, which was an eruption of flame. In fact, on the interview that people will probably click to, they'll hear me describe it as a hurricane, because it looked like a hurricane of fire, and it was approximately 50 miles high and 100 miles wide, which is something that's so far beyond. If one were to measure that as an actual nuke, that would have been a 100 megaton nuke.
Hmm.
Beyond anything that's ever been exploded.
Mm-hmm.
So the way we read it, because we saw it with our own eyes, you know, it wasn't covered in the media naturally, but we saw it with our own eyes. And it was probably an application, we thought at the time, of HARP, but Lenny Bloom was interviewing me, and he was the first one who brought up the idea that it might actually have been weaponry on board the shuttle. We don't know what caused it, but we saw what was caused.
Mm-hmm.
And our suspicion was that was the effect that was put up over the southern horizon of Houston, out above Texas City, or slightly south of that in the Gulf of Mexico, 5 miles south of Texas City, that was supposed to sell the public, so to speak, on the idea that Texas City had been nuked. Because many of your listeners will know that last summer they were setting up all summer long the idea that Al-Qaeda was going to nuke a U.S. port. And, in fact, they were running nuclear drills out of Fort Monroe, Virginia, and Charleston, South Carolina,
right,
simulating a 10-kiloton strike. So what we figured is it was going to be a 10-kiloton actual nuke, which is 10 times 1,000 tons of TNT, or about half the size of a Hiroshima or Nagasaki bomb, but that to sell it to the public, so to speak, like the magic trick it was, they were going to do the equivalent of the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm.
The WTC is a physical impossibility the way it came down, as the Internet has so aptly demonstrated, but that's not really the point. The demolition of the towers sold the act. It sold the magic trick. So what we saw in the air up here was supposed to be what the people of Houston were going to look at when Texas City went up with a relatively small device, so that the people of Houston would see an immensely large device, a hurricane of fire. And it was an awe-inspiring thing. But since that came 2 days after the last shuttle launch, the advent of yet another shuttle launch frightens us greatly. Now, there are numerous irregularities that you're on. The best way to pick this stuff up is not to pick it up by listening to what I said last year. I mean, that's great. It's archival, and everybody should listen to it. But the best way to do it is to catch it in advance. That's the way we did it last year, and that's the way I'm inviting your listeners to do it with us now.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need to do is examine the story that NASA is now floating about the possibilities of having to abort the shuttle mission. Because we don't read that as a possibility of having to abort the shuttle mission, but rather as a possibility of having to abort the 911-2B attack that we're afraid they're disguising as part of the shuttle mission.
Now, the shuttle is scheduled at this point to launch at 2:49 p.m. Central Time, Central Savings Time, Central Daylight Time. There we go. On Saturday, that would be July the 1st. And, of course, that would be 2:49 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time minus 6. Yeah, 3:49 Eastern. And one of the stories that we posted to our news monitoring site, WatcherMagazine.com, notes that most of the broadcast networks have decided to go live with this for the first time in a long time. Even the free networks, NBC, ABC, CBS. I mean, you'd expect Fox, CNN, and MSNBC to have reporters on scene. But even NBC is going to break away from the coverage of the U.S. Women's Open to show the shuttle launch. What? Well, let me back up and ask this. Is there some other reason besides the possibility that the shuttle might be carrying some electronic equipment that we don't know about that would make it a good time for someone to pull a false flag terror attack?
Well, let's throw the shuttle in with the weekend. Now let's get back to what you started with, which is, do I attach any significance to the July 4th weekend? And we've got it. Remember, July 4th is all about bottle rockets and, advanced rockets, and in this case, the biggest rocket of all, the space shuttle. So in a manner of speaking, they're already, remember, they try to replicate the major patterns, the major psyche, the psychological patterns of the American public. The American public's already thinking patriotism, rockets going up in the air, you know, America, the flag, John Philip Sousa, the stars, you know, it's all about national pride. So what a perfect way to set up the idea that these dirty rascals, you know, this mythical bin Laden who can't put a thumbtack in the mayor of New York's seat but can tear down the towers, this ultimate baddie bin Laden is likely going to do something that would involve an attack against America. And it may well be that the Al-Qaeda statement, of course, which is always issued as part of these things and probably written in Hollywood, the Al-Qaeda statement, of course, would be something to the effect of, America's blasphemous intent to assault the face of God, you know, I, bin Laden, or I, whoever it is, mm-hmm. Have ordered a hit on blah, blah, blah. And so you see, the space shuttle is a stimulation of all the, the chauvinistic, nationalistic instincts that are part of the United States, the American psyche.
Mm-hmm.
And every country has chauvinistic, nationalistic instincts, but in our case, they've been highly heightened as a part of the war effort. So when we see that all the media wants to give maximum play to the shuttle event, then we wonder why is it they're so trying to focus the public?
Mm-hmm.
And this has been broadcast, or rather printed, in Houston via the Houston Chronicle, which has been part and parcel of all the attempts to set up Texas City, by the way. They're out-and-out traitorous collaborators with this thing. The Houston Chronicle has billed this as a make-or-break shot. If we don't do it right this time, the space shuttle program's over.
Hmm.
So if you look at that from my perspective, being a Houstonian, what the Chronicle, in effect, has said, since we're looking at what media motives are, what the Chronicle has said is, Houston, you're going to lose billions if you don't do it right. So it kind of brings up the question of, well, what's the it that they have to do right?
Mm-hmm.
So we think the shuttle is very much a focusing of the public on the space program. And remember, anytime you send up the shuttle, you automatically focus on Florida and Texas,
mm-hmm.
the two Bush boys state, Brother Jeb and then King George, right?
That is true, yes.
So if you're going to pop Southeast Texas, which is what we think the most likely, not exclusively, but we think that the most likely target area if there is a planned 911 to be attacked coming up in early July, or more specifically on the 4th of July weekend, what better way to have the whole nation focusing in on Texas? And furthermore, what better way to have your loyal national Zionist media on scene in Clear Lake, 15 miles south of Houston, so that they can go, 70 miles east to Beaumont, Port Arthur, in case they want to do some kind of 911 to be attacked there, or Texas City, which is only 20 miles from NASA. You see, it's an opportunity to draw the public's attention to the space program. It's an opportunity to stimulate the patriotic and, nationalistic instincts that are always so dear to anybody trying to start a war or enhance a war that's already started, in this case. And it's an opportunity to pre-position your media assets. We don't see media as news, because you and I know very well the media isn't there to broadcast information, but to broadcast disinformation and misinformation. But what we see them as is enemy agents. When they come to town, we start shaking.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, they were brought into the Houston metro area under cover of filming the NASA, the Johnson Space Center part of this in Clear Lake City. Remember, that's Mission Control.
Mm-hmm.
So what better way to pre-position your agents? And they are agents. They're information agents. It's their job to, quote-unquote, get the story right, which in this brave new Orwellian world means getting the story right according to the official story that's already been written before the story happens. Making the false flag look like anything but a false flag is their job.
We've covered this before, but let's revisit it again, just for people who may be new to you and your analysis and the work that Ghost Troop, the Cyber Intelligence Unit, does. Why would an American government benefit? Why would someone within the government, let's put it that way, see it to their advantage to launch a false flag terror attack?
Okay. Well, first off, we have to rid ourselves of a certain prejudice that most of us have, which is called humanity, decency, or ethics. If any human motive or any human philosophy, or humane philosophy, let's say, would militate against that sort of thing. In fact, the fact that most of us operate according to a humane general philosophy, which we call, you know, just general common decency, mm-hmm. is what makes most of us incapable of seeing how the government would find that to be advantageous. So the first thing we play on is the fact that these people think differently from us.
Okay.
Now, what we have to do in order to prove the motives behind the 911 2B attack, the one in the future, the follow-up, is we just have to fall back on the extensive research done by you and many other people in the internet community, the excellent research done to explain why the original attack was so necessary. A false flag attack allows you to mobilize your country against whoever it is you set up as the patsy who committed the false flag attack. All it requires is an instinct for mass homicidality, and clearly the only thing George Bush has going for him is that he's a mass murderer. That's the only thing, well, beyond the fact that his daddy was president before him, those are the only things that he really brought to this whole equation. So if you're willing to kill hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, then the military logic of a false flag attack is overwhelming. Hitler did it. I mean, you know, that the Reichstag fire was a mm-hmm. false flag attack.
Sure.
The setup of the Polish radio stations, or rather German radio stations, which were supposedly attacked by Polish forces, I think August 30th or August 31st, the night before the September 1st, 1939 invasion of Poland.
Mm-hmm.
Another false flag attack. False flag attacks are extremely common and extremely useful.
Remember the Maine.
Right. Well, you know, there's the perfect case. The Maine, of course, was, you know, just conveniently was sent into Havana Harbor, where it most conveniently blew up. And we find out 50 years later that the Navy writes a little sorry about that note to the Spanish government saying that forensics have shown that it blew up from within.
Mm-hmm.
What no one said to this day is it was destroyed from within as part of a government operation. It's a very good parallel to the Liberty, the USS Liberty, another naval event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the false flags have been used extensively, or at least, let's say, those two cases seem extremely persuasive, that we used the false flag attack of the USS Maine, when we blamed the Spanish Empire, as a pretext for taking over the Caribbean and the Pacific from Spain. We got the Philippines, Hawaii, and Cuba out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we used the false flag attempt that we did in connection with the Israeli government and the Zionist elements of the Israel First community in the U.S., we use that as a pretext to try to do exactly what we're doing in the Middle East now in 1967. We were going to waste a ship or allow a ship to be wasted and use it as a pretext for attacking Egypt.
Hmm.
In connection with which attack, by the way, we actually had nukes up locked and loaded.
Hmm.
We weren't going to hit them in a little way. We had jets set, but the jets weren't going to go in there strafing them with bullets, man. The jets were going to go in there and nuke them.
And then there was Operation Northwoods, which would have blamed the shooting down of an American passenger jet on Cuba as a pretext for invading Cuba and taking out Castro. This was during the Eisenhower administration.
Yeah, Northwoods was actually it's a nice test case because actually, I think it was a much better false flag conception than the 911 event
mm-hmm.
in a lot of ways, because they actually provided for small-end things like, oh, assassinations, school bus bombings, localized acts of sabotage. What we have now with the Al-Qaeda, you know, Operation Al-Qaeda, is we have a unit, Al-Qaeda, which has been built up as something that for some reason won't do any of these rational things that terrorists do. Terrorists start by putting thumbtacks in chairs and drawing graffiti. Terrorists are like street gangs. They start out low, and they have to do a great process of evolution before they're ready to do things like set off nukes. But the Bush people have got a shake-and-bake terror plan where they're not going to go with any of the small stuff. None of the stuff that would set up the script for a terror operation the way Operation North would have it, the small details that make it persuasive,
mm-hmm.
what the Bush people have gone with is a straight Hollywood scenario where they're going to put up phenomenal, spectacular effects, like the World Trade Center, which was a false flag attack and quite effective. It destroyed the Constitution and brought us into World War III. They called it the Global War on Terror, but at this point, who doesn't know the joke? And it's very much the kind of attack that they had planned for 9-1-1-2B, the aborted 9-1-1-2B of last year, July 28th, where they set up a simulated 100-megaton nuclear explosion, a 30-minute to one-hour eruption of fire that, again, on the Cloak and Dagger interview, you'll hear me describe as a hurricane. It was a hurricane of fire. An awesome effect.
Now, I forgot to mention this the last time we spoke, but my wife and my sister-in-law were here last summer and saw something very strange in the sky over St. Louis, which almost looked as though the clouds over St. Louis were on fire. And this was in early July, just about a year ago this time. And I don't remember the date, sadly, because I'd like to check it against the dates that the HAARP was in use, and I'll probably be able to do that later on. But it was a stunning display of orange off to the north and northwest of St. Louis, which lasted for a good long while. It was during I checked that. I guess it was early August because it was right after we'd had a very severe storm come through. The power was out, and they were sitting on the deck on the back of the house without no power, but looking at this strange display in the sky, which all at once ended with a pop, an audible pop. And then it looked at whatever had been shining light into the clouds or casting a reflection on the clouds or whatever just suddenly stopped as though someone had turned off a switch. It was really, you know, and not having seen it, it's very difficult to describe, but it almost sounds like something similar to what you saw over Texas City that night.
Sure, and I bet you nary a word showed up in the mainstream media.
No, not a word. And we've not found anyone else who says they saw it either. So,
well, we were more fortunate down here. There were many people watching, another thing about setting up a NASA scenario, if you want to hit Southeast Texas, is that it allows you to slap down exceptional informational protocols. In other words, since it's a big national activity with so many economic and political ramifications for Southeast Texas, all the media, you know, smile all the way when they just say we're cooperating with the government. But it basically allows an information monopoly to occur. And that's what we think happened last year, because last year after our event here, which was something that no one who saw will ever forget for the rest of their lives. Let me throw in a witness. HPD, Houston Police Department Criminal Intelligence Division, Sergeant John Karshner is someone who worked with us on that mission. He was very anxious about it and had a hard time, I'm sure, talking to his boss about it, but he was working with us, and one might say he was working contrary to the purposes of the FBI, who had been in touch with him and me both. Carter and I talked after the event, and he said he agreed with me it looked like a nuke. So this is not the kind of thing anyone was supposed to miss. The only reason that more people didn't see it, I would say 1 out of 20 people in the Houston area saw it, because at 9 p.m., 1 out of 20 people was outside. But okay. Had it gone the way they wanted it to go, when they did a conventional explosive at British Petroleum, Texas City, your people can search it, July 28th, British Petroleum, Texas City, there was a refinery explosion, the third in 15 months, incidentally. They'd been setting up the sequence for a while. And after that 5 o'clock central explosion, all the residents of Texas City were ordered to their house, you know, button up, close your window, shut the blinds type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the HAARP, what we think was a HAARP effect, the 100-megaton simulation happened at about 8:30 that evening. So there was a 3.5-hour period when the people of Texas City were obeying the authorities by doing the worst thing they could possibly do. They were staying put and sitting it out.
Mm-hmm.
During that 3.5 hours, there wasn't supposed to be a small explosion and then a 100-megaton sham nuke effect and nothing else. There was supposed to be a small explosion, and then at the time the 100-megaton HAARP sham nuke went up, there was supposed to be a 10-kiloton nuke actually destroying Texas City.
Mm-hmm.
We think, and most of our cooperative media thinks, that the thing that stopped that event was the public affairs campaign that I think Ghost Troop can fairly say that it spearheaded, but that many people in the internet were working on with us. not coherently, not with unified command. Obviously, Ghost Group has coherence and unified command because it's my unit and I command it.
Mm-hmm.
But there were many people out there who were our, what we call the InfoWar allies, who were getting the word out. The only reason we think they went through the sham effect in the first place is probably intimidation. Intimidation and an opportunity to create enough distraction that they could do whatever they needed to do to clean up the signs, to remove the equipment and whatnot. And there was a massive evacuation of federal equipment from Texas City all during this event.
It may also be that whatever was used to generate that effect takes an awful long time to power up and power down again so that it can't be turned off in a moment's notice once an abort code is issued. Now, you have set up Ghost Troop, your cyber intelligence unit, to monitor the media and look for clues and signals in the media.
Right. We run counter media, you might say.
Right. Why would the elements within the government that you believe are looking to create this next false flag terror event give any clues through the media as to what they're about to do?
Oh, because the media is not there to give information, and there's no danger that it's going to give the story away. They're a controlled asset. They're a controlled asset of the Orca Ball. The media is not there to inform. The media is there to misinform and disinform. In other words, the media is there to prepare the public for what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that last summer the media was left and right all summer long running specials about how Al-Qaeda was going to nuke a port city.
They were calling it America's Hiroshima.
Right. I mean, in other words, if you're going to nuke a U.S. port city, what do you want your media doing? Telling America that their ports are going to be nuked.
Mm-hmm.
You have to set it up. In the same way we predicted in January, I issued a tsunami earthquake alert to the West Coast because we believed that the mega thermal activity, the extreme high temperatures that had you guys, you know, showing your little white legs in the middle of January in the Midwest, that couldn't be possible if there weren't manipulation of what we thought at that time was a Pacific plate, and we still think that. So we issued a tsunami alert. Well, wouldn't you know it, ever since, all the media has been talking about is the danger of a California tsunami. And what do you think the FEMA and Homeland Security have been practicing?
Mm-hmm.
The West Coast tsunami.
Right.
You see, you can't do a West Coast tsunami if you don't convince the people in the West Coast that it's already preordained. It's nature. The ability of the media to operate upon the public psyche is probably the most important weapon in the entire Bush League arsenal. You know, there are four pillars of the American republic, and they are the executive, the legislative, the judicial, and also the media, the press, the free press, protected by the First Amendment, and mentioned specifically.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, a lot of people, Jefferson included, presupposed that the free press was the thing upon which all other free institutions of government were premised. So the ability to take that immense power of the media and use it not only to black out essential information from the media, which I might be willing to grant that some the government at certain times might have to do for rational reasons of security, but not only that rational power of blacking out, but the irrational, or if you will, illegal power of implanting falsehood, misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
So the media has to misinform the public, else the public would have no easy answer and would start looking for its own. So if I tell you, let's take it parallel. And let's take it like an extortion. If I come by and I'm your buddy and I suggest that, you know, there are some Filipino kids. They're bad people. I've seen them around your house. I saw them looking around your house, I say, next time I see you.
Mm-hmm.
I saw them throw a rock at your dog. That's why your dog's hurt, I say, the next time I see you.
Mm-hmm.
And then next thing you know, one time you come home and, boy, your house has been busted into. Your stuff is gone and somebody left a note in Filipino.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, who do you blame?
Well, those
Filipinos.
Sure.
I laugh all the way to the bank because I'm hawking your stuff. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's my operation. That's all the media is doing. They're a partner to crime. We're just talking about crime. You know, we need to get out of the idea that we have special terms like false flag or state-sponsored terrorism. What we're talking about is murder. We're
mm-hmm.
talking about mass murder. We're talking about criminal activity, and it seeks to use all the devices that criminal activity always uses. There's nothing the U.S. government under Bush, under King George, since we're coming on Independence Day, let's call him King George, there's nothing King George is doing that Al Capone wouldn't have done if he could have, or that Al Capone didn't do in Chicago. Remember, Al Capone had control of the Chicago papers, the Chicago government. You know, this is just criminal activity expanded to the level of the national government, which is exactly, when World War II was over, what everybody said when we got into analyzing what the Nazis had actually done. Everybody said, my God, they were nothing but street thugs. Well, yeah. I had a very close associate, Dr. Peter W. Gunther, a former German officer from the Second World War, a beloved mentor, he's passed on since, and he was the first person to tell me that Bush was another Hitler. And I figured that was coming from pretty good authority because he had stood and listened to Hitler in his youth, you know, when he was defending his homeland, as the government told him, against terrorists, as the government told him, and had to go attack an Eastern Asian country, as the government told him, to protect his family and his way of life.
He was on the Eastern Front?
Right. Well, we have our own Eastern Front, and they used all the same arguments and devices to get us into it. And, you know, what he said, I remember we came to the point that at one time we were talking and I said, they're going to say all the same things about this bunch of war criminals that they said about the bunch of war criminals that were in charge of your army and your country. And I remember he laughed so ironically because I said, why is it that they're always shocked that these kind of, you know, perverts, weirdos, homicidal maniacs, megalomaniacals, paranoids, why is it people are surprised when these people come back in and do it again? Don't people realize this is exactly the kind of people who have to be there if you're going to do it again?
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to the idea that normal people can't do this. You have to have institutionalized psychosis. Criminality and homicidality are not things, thank God, that most of us have on the top of our minds.
I had a college professor who taught a class in the American presidency, and he put it this way, which I think was very astute. No rational person would subject himself, herself, or their family to the type of media circus and scrutiny that a candidate for national public office has to endure. Therefore, it follows by logical extension that those we elect to the presidency of the United States are, by definition, insane.
Right.
And I think that's very... Yeah. Well, let's get back to the media then. If the media is basically running interference and publishing what the public is supposed to hear, what information
of... dropping leaflets. Consider it like a plane. Consider it a television. But what they're doing is they're dropping leaflets, just like a psychological operation drops leaflets over an enemy target.
Okay.
The media to us is like a psychological operation controlled by the military and the Bush League aimed against the American people as if the American people were a military target and an enemy.
Okay. So how do you draw useful information from what you see in the media?
Oh, well, it's like interrogation. When you do interrogation, you're never counting on somebody to tell you the straight facts. You're counting on being able to read the lies and contrast and compare them well enough to extract the facts from them. We always read as disinformation. I watch more TV, God help me, than any three of your listeners put together. But I watch TV like an interrogator, you know, and a legitimate interrogator, not this Abu Ghraib Gitmo site, but like somebody who's trying to interview witnesses. The media will always, if you know how to read it correctly, they'll give it away. So that, for instance, we saw an immense preparation, a lot of Al-Qaeda, remember the trial, who was the last trial that we had before the Chicago 9/11 mission? I am Al Qaeda.
Zacharias Moussaoui. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This thing was set up right before we found out in May, the 2nd through 4th, that the government was simulating coincidentally a Chicago 9/11 event, which coincidentally involved the collapse of a large building, which coincidentally is what they're saying 6 weeks later is what 7 kids in Florida were getting ready to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you could see the media trying to turn the dials. Like adjusting the buttons that you turn to get your broadcast just right, they were turning the dials of the public psyche. So the public thought, my God, these evil maniacs named Al-Qaeda, these people who laugh and mock us even as they stand before the death penalty and the justice of the American people. That wasn't coincidence. There is no coincidence in the media cycle. So they'll actually, by watching what they want us to know, we can infer what it is they want to do to us. Because whatever they set up is what they're preparing. So if you watch them, all you have to do is watch it anemically, folks. Anytime you see an Al-Qaeda story, let's take the most recent one. We've seen in the last month and a half a mobilization of world opinion against the idea of nuking Iran.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly we can go back to the beginning of the year and realize that there is very much an American media drive to get us ready to nuke Iran. Well, the world community has come out against that, and candidly, we and other groups in the Internet info war have exposed the prospect of a massive nuclear attack against an American target so much that it's making it harder for them to do. So all of a sudden, we don't have the goal of nuclear war with Iran, but rather, let's say, a strengthening of the presidency and a continuation of the 9-1-1 cabal. So, accordingly, the Al-Qaeda story gets downsized. As of, the 4th of June, we had the setup of a Canadian Al-Qaeda story. There was a fresh thing. And then on 666, a lot of people were looking at the numerology, and we picked up what we call the 666 shift. That was the day that CBS and the FBI colluded, put out a story, which locked down what the Canadian 2 days earlier event had started to suggest, which was that there was, quote, a new phase in Al-Qaeda's decentralized second-generation Al-Qaeda 2.0 structure, unquote, which meant that they were going to use, and what was it? Homegrown terror.
We've been talking about that phrase, yes.
You'd have to go to a marijuana convention to hear any more talk about homegrown than you hear on the American media nowadays. Now, where did this come from? Why is all of a sudden the American media is talking about homegrown? Well, the patsy answer is, well, because Al-Qaeda's changed. But the advanced answer to those who read the media as we do, anemically, as a counter-media unit, what it means is that the media is trying to set up the next story in the Al-Qaeda attack. So now we have, as of 666, the CBS FBI story saying that by the end of the year, we would certainly have a homegrown terror attack against an American target. In the following 3 weeks, we have had a story that, A, they wanted to do a three times the size of Oklahoma City fertilizer bomb through Canada, and wanted to capture Parliament and cut off the Prime Minister's head. B, that they almost hit New York subways with a nerve gas attack or a cyanide attack back in 2003, but didn't go through with it because it wouldn't kill enough people. I will grant a little bit of credit to the media tramps. Even they had a hard time saying that one without breaking a smile because it was so ridiculous. And then a week later, we have the third permutation of the new homegrown Al-Qaeda story, which is the seven guys in Florida who didn't have army boots and couldn't afford a camera, but were somehow going to blow up the Sears Tower and bring it down. So we have, first off, the institution of a new term, homegrown, to reflect a geopolitical reality. We don't need a massive Al-Qaeda strike anymore because we're not going to have a massive World War III attack on Iran the way we read it and the way the international community says it. What we need, if you're the Bush League, is a small terror event, comparatively small, maybe smaller than the original 9/11, but larger than Oklahoma City, which merely causes enough casualties and enough death that we can continue, that the Bush League can continue with its dictatorship in America. So the whole script has been rewritten. Don't think of news as news. Think of news as a soap opera. And don't think of the CIA or any of these agencies who are answering to Bush right now. Don't think of the intelligence services as people who are actually looking for intelligence. Look at them as understudies in script writing. All they're doing is trying to prepare a story. And the job of intelligence in this new, you know, this brave new world, this Orwellian construct, the job of intelligence is not to figure out anything except what next week's story is going to be and to come up with the quote-unquote data and facts used to prop up the story. So that's kind of a long and contorted answer to your rather simple question, which is why do we watch the media and why do we think that tells us things?
We're talking with Captain Eric May, who's the commanding officer of a cyber intelligence unit that he calls Ghost Troop. And we'll remind you, if you're listening to this on the Remnant Radio Network, that this entire interview will be archived by the time you hear this at our website, PIDradio.com, as well as show notes, which will link to interviews and articles that we discuss here in the program tonight. Now, Captain, you've got an editorial at the that's been published by the Lone Star Iconoclast, which is a newspaper based out of Crawford, Texas, ironically enough. Guest commentary
about... Oh, not at all, ironically. That shows that we know what we're doing, too, and we know how to find allies.
And when we tip our hat to the publisher of the Lone Star Iconoclast, he was...
A brave man, a patriot, and a real journalist. And God knows it's harder to find a real journalist than a brave man and a patriot, even.
Yes, especially among the mainstream media. But in addition to the article to which we will link, your article, 9/11 Truth and Texas Terror, I understand that you've attracted some attention from the NBC television affiliate down in Beaumont, which is one of the targets, possibly, of a Texas terror event.
Right, in connection with the Lone Star Iconoclast article, incidentally. We wrote a cyber article. Most of our publications go out into cyberdom, as most real news does start in cyberdom nowadays. And Leon Smith, an associate in Crawford, where I've spent a lot of time in the last 3 years of InfoWars, given that I'm in Houston, I make it there pretty regularly and have contacts up there. Leon Smith took it, abridged it, and published it, and that was a specific prediction that the Bush League would attempt the 9/11 2B attack. In fact, it's the first time our phrase, our code for the next attack, 9/11 2B, actually made it into print. That printed and, of course, cyberlinked article was read all across the state, probably all around the world by now. A lot of people in the VIP sector read the Crawford Lone Star Iconoclast because it's noted as being the one liberal voice against Bush in the center of Texas. And one of the groups that picked it up was NBC, the NBC local affiliate in Beaumont, Texas. Well, Beaumont, Texas had an ExxonMobil terror incident, so-called, May 13th. Which we picked up from military and police contacts. It was official use only information, but it wasn't classified. And we looked into it and found, surprise, surprise, the circumstances were rather suspicious. It was a, you might say, a homegrown terror threat of a domestic American terrorist saying that there were three bombs planted at ExxonMobil headquarters in Beaumont. Well, we found out that information about that had been totally clamped down, and had it not been for a few publications that went out pretty quickly via Homeland Security websites, we wouldn't have even had authentication that it occurred at all. And had it not been for some pretty good hound dogging, you know, my background was police, military, and journalism, so I have a pretty easy time getting people on the inside to talk to me until they're told specifically not to talk to me, which happens pretty quickly after they talk to me the first time. So we confirmed that ExxonMobil had a little bit of a Texas terror set up. Now, we'd already predicted after the failure of the Bush League to set up Chicago back May 2nd through 4th, that the next move would be a return to a Texas target. Remember, Texas City has been the standard target that we've been predicting for. We predicted for Texas and Texas City and Houston Metro. Texas City is within Houston Metro.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the home base of the Bush family empire. This is where Daddy Bush came after he left the presidency in 1993. And so Beaumont actually responded to the story, and I'm currently in discussions with NBC people who are interested in knowing more about how it is that we reached our warning statement, how it is that we inferred that Texas was a target. At this point, what we think is that probably any sensible person sitting in a news director's desk anywhere on the southeast Texas coast, which we have put under watch for a Bush terror strike this summer, anyone would want to know how we came up with it and to understand better our analysis and warning. We're talking to them, but right now we think at some point probably NBC National, which of course is hand in glove with the whole thing, will tell NBC Local, shut up and stop talking.
Yeah,
this is what's happened so many times in so many different places. We find that the low-end journalists actually have the instincts of doing journalism, which, of course, the high-end journalism people have prostituted away, and that's how they became high-end journalists.
Well, NBC is owned by General Electric, which, of course, is a major defense contractor.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. No, once you get up to the level of the talking of the people who run the operation, you know, asking NBC to report something about a false flag attack is asking the military-industrial complex to pull the plug on the war. This war only continues because of a false flag origin, and it will only continue because of a false flag continuation.
Yeah, it's
so
like the
at the high level, at the executive level, talking to NBC National about warning the people in Texas is like talking to the elves about warning the people that Santa Claus is coming.
Yeah, the fox calling out from inside the hen house, nobody here but us chickens.
Exactly. Captain, you know, we ought to talk a myth about some of the inconsistencies, since we have alleged, both on the basis of prior actual experience, that there was an attempt on Texas City 2 days after the last NASA launch. I think it bears some analysis of the story that NASA would like us to believe right now about why they're thinking about aborting that space shuttle mission.
Good point. What is the latest on that? I was away from the news cycle this afternoon and didn't hear the latest.
Okay. Well, let's back up for a minute. First off, three of the major players in the mission management team, well, actually one person from the mission management team and two of the top safety engineers, have said, we don't want to go. We can't be sure about it. The foam is going to hold. It presents a danger. We recommend a mission abort. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, the first question. There have been over 100 shuttle flights, around 120 actually, but there have been, let's say 100. It's easy to work with since we're going to do statistics. We've known since the 80s that there's foam falling off these things all the time. That's old news. But why is it that the last three missions have been jeopardized by the foam issue? Mm-hmm. In other words, Columbia burned up on reentry, supposedly because of foam. Discovery last year, at about the exact same time that we began to compromise the 9112B operation by our internet campaign, Discovery was said to have foam problems. Now the next one's going up, and they say foam problems may stop it. Okay, let's take the first two. The odds of any one of these 100 missions having a fatal or near-fatal foam problem is 1 in 100 if there are 100 missions.
Mm-hmm.
So the odds to Columbia coming down because of a foam issue that had never brought down another one is 1 in 100. Then the next flight almost came down, they say, Discovery, because of the same thing. Well, that's 2 in a row. That means 1 in 100 times 1 in 100, or 1 in 10,000 that it would happen 2 times in a row. Now throw in the fact that this is NASA, the most expensive scientific consortium in the United States government, and that what this explanation they're giving, the foam insulation problem, requires us to believe is that the previous 98 flights not only did not happen, but they didn't learn anything from the incidental foam detachments of the previous 98 that allowed them to prevent the latest two. So not only is this a 1 in a 10,000 coincidence that happened the last two and is about to happen on the next one, they say, but it flies in the face of the accumulation of scientific and technical expertise, which is part of any program, right?
Right.
So we're getting phenomenal odds against this crappy story they've got working. So the question becomes, and again, we've got to be counter-media for a minute, why would they say that they have a foam problem? And the point is, it's not really foam, it's insulation. And anybody who's been in public affairs or public relations, and I've been in both, and I work for NBC, incidentally, something NBC is probably very chagrined about at this point. but anybody who's been in the media understands that insulation means the ability to put off a BS story and keep people from putting heat on your employer. So the way we read the whole foam story is that it's a coded message. It's a way of talking in the open about something that only a few people understand, like any code is. And what they're talking about is not whether or not the foam on the shuttle is going to crack, but whether or not the American people, the internet resistance, if you will, is going to crack open the conspiracy and thereby put heat on the people who are trying to do the operation. So when we hear them say that after all these statistical, you know, astronomical statistics against the current situation, when we hear them say that the foam issue is, again, the central issue, what we're hearing between the lines is we're still worried about the ability of the internet to detect, announce, and therefore spoil our plans.
Mm-hmm.
So now let's go again. We've had two engineers say the foam issue is a great problem. And we've had a mission management team member write a public email after being fired for protesting the foam issues and the insecurity. Let's for a minute suppose that the foam and insulation issues are, let's just play their story. If you're George Bush, why on earth, when you're down around 35% in the polls, are you going to go in the face of three of your top NASA safety people and push for a launch to occur, which if it fails, as the administrators are saying is a danger, is going to result in a catastrophe to international prestige at a time when U.S. prestige internationally is already in a catastrophe stage, is going to result in a catastrophe in your national political credibility because you've ramrodded a space shuttle up much the same way you ramrodded an army into a quicksand war in the Middle East, is going to result in the physical destruction of one of the most valuable assets in your national aviation, you know, the most valuable asset in your national aviation armory, the shuttle, and it's going to result in the deaths of the crew. Come up, if you can, you know, do my job for a minute, folks, you people who listen. Why on earth would this mission be so important to do at this particular time in the face of all these obstacles and threats when they had the option of delaying and doing it over? The space window, the window's open until August 28th, they tell us. So that's 7 weeks they've got to do it right. Why are they putting all their chips on this one launch? What possible sense does it make on a rational basis if you're trying to play NASA as a rational entity simply interested in doing space exploration?
That's a really good question, and I just want to bring up a story that was just published by the Associated Press a little over an hour ago, just before we went to press here tonight, Captain, that said that NASA is now telling the world that they may be able to land the shuttle Discovery if it's too damaged to safely return the crew. They may be able to land it by remote control, with the crew remaining behind at the International Space Station for up to 81 days. And, of course, that would require then a rescue mission to be launched with the shuttle Atlantis. So just a new chapter in this story being put out there as of 6:53 Eastern time tonight by the Associated Press.
Right. And they've also been saying that there's a 60% chance it can't go up because of meteorological considerations. Mm-hmm. Now, I've actually listened to the NASA meteorological experts talking this over, and I grant I'm not a meteorologist, but I was an Army battalion intelligence officer, and I had to keep up with weather reports.
Mm-hmm.
Man, it's more than I can understand. The gist of it is it sounds like they're playing hocus-pocus, you know, bogus science to justify what they want to do. So there's a very good chance they won't send up that mission, and I believe in my soul that every time we do what we're doing right now, we make the prospects of that mission going up more and more difficult for NASA.
Would you consider the scrubbing of this launch a successful mission then for Ghost Troop?
If this mission is scrubbed, I'm going to claim success for Ghost Troop. And I'm not going to complain. That will not be propaganda or psyop on our part. That's simply that we have detected this thing from 11 months in advance, warned about it constantly, and as we've gotten closer and closer to the event, we have focused and sharpened our analysis to the point that we have published an article saying what that son of a gun is going to do, and we published it in Crawford, Texas, where he's supposed to be taking his summer break in another month.
Okay.
So if they cancel the flight, they're going to cancel the flight. I don't care what kind of meteorological BS they come up with. They're going to cancel the flight if they cancel the flight because they're going to abort this particular version of the 9-1-1-2B attack. That's the way that we've played it out, and I gave your listeners an opportunity to work with some of to logically go through some of the processes that we go through, like working through the inconsistencies of the insulation story, working through the inconsistencies of the launch in the face of all the obstacles. And we can find no other explanation to account for why NASA is acting the way they're acting. So, yes, we will certainly claim it as a Ghost Troop success.
Along,
by the way, with the idea that the Texas Southeast Coast is now under alert. Man, we said Bush was going to shift back to Texas and probably try something smaller scale immediately after the Chicago 9/11 incident, which we were on to in early May.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't give the orders for them to set up every detail, every particular of our prediction they have set up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, look, either I'm running them or they're doing what we're predicting. Those are the only two options.
Well, Captain, we're coming down to about the last 3 minutes of our time here tonight. I wanted to throw one more question at you, which is one that I'm sure skeptics have already considered, and that's this. If you're dealing with elements within the United States government that have no compulsions about slaughtering thousands of their fellow Americans for political and personal gain, why are you still alive?
That's one of the best questions in Ghost Troop, and it gets a lot of debate. Let me say that, I'm an American fighting man. I was trained to be a soldier when I was 17 in the 1st Cavalry Division. I never stopped being a soldier. You know, it's not just Marines who never stop being Marines. Armed Forces members never cease to be that. So I'm prepared for whatever comes of this mission because this is a mission of conscience. I can't not do this mission. Having said that, you know, I hope for the best. And part of the reason that I think that maybe I've been left intact to this point is because I didn't get started on 9-1-1-2B analysis. My first entire year in the InfoWar started when they covered up the Battle of Baghdad, which is what really happened when we took Baghdad the April 5th through 8th of 2003, when everybody else was seeing Jessica Lynch. Remember, the media is there to disinform and misinform. And during that year, I filed copious congressional and official military paperwork. And my great, my suspicion, and candidly my great hope, is that in the same way that there's a blacklist for people they want to kill, there may be a whitelist for people who are too difficult to kill. People who have become embedded in the apparatus of government. And Bush, remember, they only control it in bits and places. The reason they're trying to keep the scenario going is to expand their control over the federal bureaucracy. I think my name is so deeply embedded into every department of the federal bureaucracy, different police agencies I've been in touch with, federal, national, federal, state, local, different military commands I've been involved with, you know, echelons above reality, corps, division, just different connections that I have made that I think make it such that it's an extremely expensive proposition in terms of the info war to take me out. That's all I can hope at this point. I do know that when I started the InfoWar back in May 14th of 2003 is when I got the Fort Stewart confirmed the Battle of Baghdad cover-up and the suppression of the Constitution. I was told that by Special Forces Colonel Neil Dennington at Fort Stewart, Georgia, who told me they'd be assassinating people to keep the scam going. So clearly the idea that the federal government would go to the point of conducting assassinations was a very early and prevalent idea. And I can only think, the only answer I can give is that just as there is a blacklist, there is a whitelist.
Well, and it could be, and it could just be that the good Lord has more work for you yet to do. I hate to cut you off, Captain, but we are running right up against the clock here tonight. For the benefit of our listeners on the Remnant Radio Network, we need to keep within a 60-minute frame.
Well, that's great. Do go down to the links, folks. G.T. Derrick is going to put some good ones there, and I think you'll find those illustrative, particularly the one related to the July 28th mission.
I will put those in the show notes. Captain May, we will talk with you again soon, and we thank you for listening tonight to PID Radio. Your comments and questions are always welcome at our email address, which is radio@peeringinthedarkness.com, and our forum is always open to discuss the topics that we talked about here tonight or anything else that catches your eye in the way of the way the world works. For Captain May, I'm Derek Gilbert. Thanks for listening to PID Radio.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear, a better day is coming soon to get us out.
KID Radio.